Hello, good evening. You're listening to the Kill Radio Tuesday News with John and Maria.
Which mic do I have?
Hello there.
Oh, yeah, that'll work. Right. We have working mics, and we enjoy it.
Working mics are great.
I'm going to put on the instant messenger, so the four or five of you out there can tell us what's going on in the world today. If anybody wants to call in, today would be a good day. We don't have any guests or anything like that, and there's always news to talk about.
Can we announce the phone number? Is that our number?
Yes, our number is 213-252-0998, and you're listening to the Kill Radio Tuesday News with John and Maria, or with Maria and John. I saw North Country yesterday, and I'm feeling very, very, very guilty.
Well, I hadn't seen the movie, so you don't need to feel guilty. I have no idea. I can't even make the connection. So.
Oh no, North Country is the movie with Charlize Theron about the female miners and how they're horribly, horribly, horribly mistreated by the men who work in the mines.
Oh. Okay.
And this woman's case was the first to go to trial and win. It basically made it so that women have more of an semblance of equal rights. It changed national policy on the way women can be treated at work and the whole idea of sexual harassment and stuff like that.
Well, of course, now none of the miners are treated well. Both male and female, because George Bush has deregulated the mines.
Exactly. So
that's
now,
the irony.
Now we have equal opportunity mistreatment. Iraq body count for today. From IraqBodyCount.net, number of civilians reported killed by military intervention in Iraq, minimum 38,254, maximum 42,646. You know, it's funny, it's kind of like watching gas prices. It's horrible. I'm like, I remember back in the day when there were only 30,000 civilians killed. Now there's 38. Oh, my. Let's see.
And those are conservative estimates.
Oh,
I
yes.
And that's what we have access to through mainstream media, right?
Again, yeah, these are just these are just the official reported deaths, not from direct military intervention.
Right, but that's not what Iraq is reporting on. I mean, I'm sure that their country probably has different.
Yeah.
The different number.
Well, but like
what
this,
we have access
like,
to.
So yeah.
So these are very, you know.
Well, this is an independent source. I'm not sure exactly how they get their data, although if you go to IraqBodyCount.net, there's plenty of information on how they collect their data. But again, this doesn't include... This is basically people who have exploded or been shot. You know, this doesn't include people who maybe lost their homes and got sick and died.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying it's a huge count, and it doesn't even include everything. So it's already...
Yeah.
It's a huge number of people, and it doesn't... And it's not... And it's a conservative estimate.
Oh, and speaking of, but remember before, just a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about illegal immigration and how basically this suddenly became a big hot button issue because the president was basically grasping at straws for us to, you know, debate away anything but the war, to talk about anything but the war.
The decider, yes.
Right, the decider, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, magically we've sprouted thousands of National Guardsmen to guard the fence or something like that. That issue is apparently done with. It's no longer in the news. And now I cannot believe it, but the gay amendment issue is back. The gay marriage amendment.
And that's your favorite one, isn't it? Isn't that your favorite issue?
Well, I do enjoy it. It's absolutely fabulous.
Yes, it is. Queer politics for the straight constituent, I guess you could say.
That's good. That's good. That could be the name of a show. Queer politics for the gay constituent, for the straight constituent.
Don't mess up your constituents. Don't get them confused.
It's funny. I interviewed a musician today, and he was talking about how radio is at an all-time low right now because the focus is on the demographic.
Oh.
So, you know, it's like you only have these radio stations that only play rap music or only play this or only play that, and so there's there's no honor given to diversity. You know, the idea that someone might want to go to a radio station and hear a variety of kinds of music.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what's happening in the news as well.
Yeah.
I think.
You kind of have to go to the alternative sources, like on the internet, and check podcasts. And there are some interesting podcasts, actually, on iTunes. So there are some interesting internet radio stations that play independent music and some that play all unsigned bands, which I've heard listened to recently, and heard some really good stuff, actually.
Kill Radio is cool like that. Like, when we have, when everything is working technically, I mean, we have shows, most of our shows, I think, play mostly independent music. But we have shows like Here Here on Mondays that only play music that's been literally mailed to us.
Oh, really? And can you guys get on iTunes? Is Kill Radio on iTunes?
You know what? We're actually, Kill Radio is actually, we've been discussing this at the meetings, sort of in the interim phase, trying to figure out how to do a podcast that's safe and reasonable without breaking all sorts of copyright laws. Because iTunes is very hardcore about not allowing you to podcast copyrighted music. But we have plenty of talk shows like the one that we're doing right now at this very moment. Although anything that's uploaded to radioforall.net is is podcastable. All you have to do is click on podcast to subscribe to it. So
anyone listening right now can log into radioforall.net.
Yeah, and podcast pretty much anything. And they get, you know, hundreds of new files of alternative media, news, music, all sorts of stuff. And that's a totally free service. They operate by donation.
It's a good service.
Yeah, definitely. So, gay. I cannot believe it's back. I really thought this issue was like, because they made a huge deal out of it. And I was like, wow, they're actually going to try to change the Constitution. And, you know, everyone was really upset and there was protesting and all sorts of stuff. And then it just like suddenly fizzled away.
Right.
Like just disappeared. I literally forgot that it was an issue until they brought it up on the news yesterday.
Well, you know, George Bush needs to try to convince people that he's some sort of a Christian. I guess that's part of it. He's trying to. I mean, basically, let's face it. The Bush administration is counting on the fact that Americans just aren't very intelligent, you know, and that Americans don't really know much about the issues and don't really aren't very informed as to what he's doing. And so he just brings up some heated issue like this, gay marriage. And he knows that that's going to pull at people's heartstrings and people who really don't know very much about what's happening in the world today are just going to hear gay marriage and probably listening to all sorts of propaganda, you know, especially in the rural South. I'm sure there's all kinds of, you know, propaganda, you know, all these people are going to become gay and they're all going to get married. And
even the Republican talking heads are saying, you know, essentially, look, this is a political move on Bush's part. Maybe we're not proud of it, but it's what we have to do to get the religious right out there to vote. I mean, they know that's how they won the election. They didn't win the election because, you know, someone who was going to vote for Kerry suddenly decided Bush was the better candidate. They, you know, I mean, technically they stole the election, but
they stole it.
That's another issue. But I mean, the bulk of their voting power comes from people who vote on issues like gay marriage.
Yeah, well, I mean, basically, you know, people are not informed. And so it's really easy to, you know, and it kind of comes down to the fear again, too. You know, there are people who are afraid our society is becoming immoral and, you know, they're worried. They're afraid of change. And so this is another one of their funky fear tactics.
And yet
these
are the same people who have no problem invading, you know, another country and, you know. Oh, that's so very moral. And, you know, no change involved there.
Exactly. I mean, that's why, you know, they're reaching out to people who aren't thinking, you know, I mean, who really aren't very well informed. And a lot of us aren't very well informed. And it's not totally our fault. It's really hard to get accurate information anymore from the media. The media is just not telling people anything. I think if most people understood some of the things that the Patriot Act does, I think people would be scared to death.
I'm mostly informed by my own news show. That's how much informed I am.
I'm informed by the internet, and I don't know how accurate that is. I mean, there is a lot of really good information, but then again, you never know who's posting it.
Exactly.
And what their agenda is either. So, I mean, I definitely think it's more accurate, and you can get more information than you can from mainstream media. But
I'm trying to upload a little news. They make you watch a commercial before they show you the news.
But it's all part of the brainwashing.
Exactly.
Right?
But here, this is about Iran. I think it's kind of interesting. Okay. It'll play.
The first signs, really, that a deal to end the deadlock over Iran's nuclear program might be possible. Might be. Iran's chief nuclear negotiator said the latest proposal by the U.S. and other world powers contains some positive steps. President Bush said he was encouraged by that reaction. And we do have exclusive details tonight about the proposal that Iran is considering. As we reported, it contains incentives and threats, carrots and sticks. But ABC News has now learned what those incentives and threats actually are. ABC's Jonathan Carl is at the State Department tonight. Jonathan?
Charlie, Iran's change in tone today comes after receiving the most generous offer yet from the United States and its allies.
ABC News has obtained a draft copy of the proposal made by the U.S., Europe, China, and Russia. The document offers a fresh start based on mutual respect. Specifically, Iran would get help building new nuclear power plants and a new facility to hold a 5-year supply of nuclear fuel.
Yeah.
The deal would also open the door to guarantees for Iran's territorial integrity, words meant to assure Iran there would be no invasion by the U.S. or Israel. There are economic incentives, too. Iran would be allowed to buy a new fleet of American and European aircraft, something which it is now forbidden to do. In exchange for all this, Iran would have to agree to stop enriching uranium, making fuel that can be used for bombs or nuclear power. But even on that point, the deal says Iran could be allowed to resume uranium enrichment in the future if it can convince the UN Security Council that it is for peaceful purposes only. If Iran rejects the deal, the draft proposal threatens a long list of sanctions, including freezing Iranian assets abroad, a travel ban on high-ranking officials, an arms embargo, and reducing diplomatic
relations. It suddenly went out. Wow, so that's interesting.
Well, see, I think all this is just propaganda. I mean, I think the government just... I think George Bush just wants to get us in another war. I think he wants to keep us in one war after another.
So it's like... It is kind of like how we started with this war in Iraq. We started by saying, look how nice we're being to Iraq. Look how we're offering them all these incentives and benefits and stuff, and all they have to do is embrace Christ or whatever it was that we wanted them to do, you know? And but then, you know, now basically he's creating a scenario in which Bush can come to the people and say, look, you know, we gave them this, you know, beautiful present and they pissed it away. So now we have to kill them.
Well, there's so many people we have to kill, but you know, I'm not going to tell you who I'd like to kill, but anyway, you know, I was listening to Randy Rhodes the other day.
Oh,
and
she's great.
Yeah. She said, now this is according to Randy Rhodes, something like 70%, I think she said, of our soldiers in Iraq think that we're fighting Iraq because they attacked us September 11th.
Right. Yeah, I had heard that as well. Although, well, actually, I don't know that I heard 70%. That sounds a little high, but...
Oh, really? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was at least that high, according to what I heard on her show.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't say it's surprising, but...
Yeah. I mean, the soldiers are pretty much sheltered from accurate information anyway. Out there, you know, they're pretty much brainwashed.
Well,
I mean, of course, you've got to brainwash the soldiers because you want them to,
well, they're soldiers,
to do what they're supposed
to
do.
Yeah, I mean, like, besides being sheltered from outside information, they're also being fed misinformation. I mean, honestly, this is probably not a very cool thing for me to say because I'm not in the military or anything like that, but I mean, you have to brainwash people to be soldiers, I think. You have to give them misinformation because no person of their own free will and volition would just would do what it requires, what you're required to do as a soldier.
Right.
I'm not saying a soldier is intrinsically stupid or bad or anything like that, but if you're going to enter into that environment, you're basically saying that you accept that you're going to be told things that you're going to accept as fact, whether they're fact or not. And the, you know, the generals that give out the orders, they know this. Mm. You know, they're punishments for talking back, I imagine. That's
yeah. I think that a lot of these soldiers don't realize it, though. I don't think they realize that they're kind of owned by the government once they enlist. I don't think that's clear to them. You know, I think a lot of people join the military thinking, oh, I'm going to fight for my country. And what's really sad is they trust that they're going to be told the truth, and they trust that they're fighting a just war. And
well, I mean, who would fight a war if they didn't actually believe it to be just? So
exactly.
All you have to do is convince them. Yeah, I mean, so you tell them every day Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11.
Right. And what do you say to people who believe that? Because I meet people who think that, and gosh, I don't know.
Too.
And I meet people who just say they just don't believe stuff. You know, I tell them about the electronic voting machines. Oh, I don't believe they exist. Well,
that they exist at all?
Yeah. I don't believe that they exist. I don't believe they're being tampered with. I don't believe, you know, that's just the kind of thing.
I mean, I could see an argument that, you know, you don't believe that they're being tampered with, but mm-hmm. not believing that they exist is kind of unusual.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what I understood from someone saying to me the other day. I got into a debate with a hardcore neocon who looked like a hippie from the 60s.
Oh, wow.
So I was kind of surprised. And
a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Exactly. And it was just really surprising. And, you know, he actually told me that he thinks it's great that the government is spying on Americans. He wants the government to listen in on his phone calls.
Some people really do respond to that. They really do like that. It makes them feel safer.
Yeah, and really, isn't safety an illusion? I mean, how are you going to be made safe if someone's spying, you know, on listening in on your phone calls? I mean, I think what I've been thinking about it is, you know, basically people like that, they often say, well, I'm not doing anything wrong.
Right.
But what they don't stop to consider is that they're not going to be judged by their own sense of right and wrong. They're going to be judged by someone else's sense of right and wrong.
They may not also be judged by what they've actually done. They might just mm-hmm. be judged by what is being said that they did.
Right, exactly. You're right.
And how are they going to defend themselves?
Right, because the Patriot Act enables the government to just arrest you secretly and hold you without habeas corpus.
The government decides it doesn't like you for some reason. It says, we found, you know, child pornography on your computer.
Mm-hmm. And of course they can
How could you defend yourself from something like that? You know?
Right, and they can go into your house or apartment and put that on your computer sure. when you're not even home and actually it will be there.
Or they don't even have to, because how could you really prove such a thing? You know?
Right.
I mean... Right. It's, well, you know, I don't believe in the war. And it's not that I don't think it's a good idea. I just don't believe it's happening. I'm kidding.
Oh. Well, see, this is the argument that I got was, well, were you there? Did you see this? And yeah. Well, you know, I can't be everywhere. But, you know, I mean, I wasn't there for September 11th, but I know it happened. You know, but
you assume it happened. Oh. It's a safe
right,
assumption.
You know, it's an assumption. Right.
Yeah. That's a problem.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. So I don't know what the best way is to debate. In that kind, you know, when I get into a debate like that with someone, I don't know how to respond to that. So,
do you want
to
see another video file? This is a failing grade for U.S. security. From World News Tonight.
Well, that's because they're not spying on us enough. So, of course, they're failing.
Well, they need to put out these things in the media to make us feel like, oh, we're really not secure enough. Please spy on us some more.
Yes.
Let's see if this plays or if they make us watch another commercial. There we go.
Looks like it's coming.
The attacks of September 11th gave this country and gave the government a new top priority,
September 11th.
Homeland Security.
Yeah. Okay. ABC
but today,
News
almost 5 years after those attacks, the leaders of the 9/11 Commission said that the U.S. and its security is being compromised by technical, financial, and political problems that should have long since been solved. They were on Capitol Hill, and they certainly did not mince words. Here's ABC's Pierre Thomas.
Stinging criticism from 9/11 commissioners. The government, they say, is still failing to protect the country.
There is still a great deal we have to do and still haven't done to protect the American people.
We do not believe that the terrorists will wait.
On airport security, the Transportation Security Administration, they say, is plagued by poor management. The terrorism watch list, designed to weed out potential terrorists before they board planes, is woefully inadequate.
Yeah, we need to add more people to that list.
After all these months and years, do not screen passengers against a comprehensive terrorism watch list before they get on that airplane.
On money to secure the homeland, commissioners were stunned by the government's recent decision to reduce funding for New York and Washington. Decisions are made, they say, based more on politics than on risk.
It's very hard to give blow F. If I could, I might. I mean, Bin Laden wants to target New York again. He wants to target Washington. Those are his two prime targets.
On the FBI, it has made some progress in reforming itself, but is moving much too slowly.
Did he ever exist?
After investing tens of millions of dollars, FBI computers remain antiquated. Its ability to share critical information is limited. Its ability to assess threats falling short. And too many of its key leaders are retiring.
They have taken some steps forward. Sometimes they've gone backwards with regard to the computer systems, for example. So it has a ways to go, and in many respects, it's still struggling.
And on the threat of nuclear terrorism, commissioners say the government's efforts get a failing grade.
I think we've got to redouble our efforts. I mean, the threat is very, very real. And there's nobody in our government right now who's going to be able to ensure us that is not right now a terrorist who's working toward our borders.
I think the potentials are huge for people to get weapons-grade material.
And commissioners say the U.S. lacks state-of-the-art technology to detect it.
Commissioners detailed a wide range of problems with national security, and at times they appeared angry and...
I got cut off again.
Great. So that's because that guy is black.
Oh, right. Can't let that happen.
So how come... So what would a political reason be for... okay, that's really distracting. There's a bear on a rooftop. Hold on a second.
Authorities
about?
On a merry chase. The bear is believed to be the exact same bear that was spotted in the area over the weekend when he was seen hanging out near a resident's swimming pool. Hmm. Authorities are calling
him. That's
cute. Whoa. I just wanted to take a little swim.
Anyway, so what would be the political incentive for something like underfunding or, you know, pulling back on national security or security for specifically New York and Washington? They said, like, it's largely because of political reasons. Is that because they're spending too much money fighting big bad gay marriage or what?
That's a good question. You know, I was surprised. I was listening to Air America recently. I was listening to Al Franken and Randy Rhodes, and both of them were complaining, oh, there's less money being spent on Homeland Security. And I was actually feeling good about that. I wish they'd eliminate that whole Homeland Security thing myself. I personally, I mean, this is my opinion, but I personally don't think that there's a real terrorist threat other than what's coming from the White House right now. That's my opinion. I think that, I mean, I agree with Alex Jones on this one. Alex Jones, his site is Infowars.com. He believes that the government is going to try to create or somehow provoke a terrorist attack just to get us to agree to giving up more civil rights and to bring in more security.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's pretty clear the Bush administration's gone out of its way to encourage terrorism rather than than bring an end to it. I don't know where I stand on the issue of Department of Homeland Security, because I almost feel like it's better not to have an organization at all than to have an organization that's underfunded, because it just means that they'll do a bad job at whatever it is that they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm not necessarily opposed to the idea of an organization whose sole purpose is to, you know, defend the United States from attack. Although I think we have an organization like that.
Right. We do have the FBI and the CIA.
Right. But let's say we need another one. I don't know, because I'm not in politics. You know, maybe it's beyond me. But if you're going to have it, then it has to be well-funded.
Maybe we need more than one. Maybe we need five more.
You could have, you know, 50 organizations, and they can all work really smoothly if they're run by competent people and they have the resources that they need to do whatever it is that they need to do.
Right.
And whatever it is that they need to do is, you know, clear and, you know, makes sense. What we have instead is the Department of Homeland Security, which is... Right. Essentially run by, from what I can tell, incompetent cronies.
Right.
And is so poorly managed and underfunded that even if it were to, I mean, forget the fact that what it's designed to do doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It can only do what it's designed to do really badly.
Right. That's a good point. And didn't we have enough security in place before September 11th? And didn't the Bush administration just not really heed the warnings and not really do what it was supposed to do to prevent September 11th from
happening? That's another good point, because people say, oh, well, you know, we need this because September 11th happened and it wouldn't have happened if we had better security, blah, 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 blah. But now it's been made rather clear that it wouldn't have happened if we actually used the security system that we already had. Mm-hmm. I believe it was called Bin Laden Determined to Attack the United States with Airplanes on September 11th.
I know. It's funny how that film footage is out there, and yet some people still will argue George Bush didn't know and couldn't have done anything to prevent it September 11th, and we need all this extra security and...
I'm willing to take the leap and say, fine, we need extra security, but not extra security that's run by morons and underfunded and mismanaged, because that's just going to be more harmful than good. It's like, sure, it would be nice to have an armed guard standing outside to kill radio and make sure that we're never invaded, but not like an idiot with a gun, you know?
Right. like, Right.
If you're going to add security, fine, but it's got to be functional.
Right. I guess, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. But I guess I'm just someone who doesn't like a whole lot of security. And maybe it's because I'm female. And, you know, when you're female, like, all your life, you're brainwashed into being afraid. And you need someone to protect you, and you have to be afraid all the time. You need a man to take care of you. And I kind of see this as the same psychology that's been used on women for a very long time, now being used on Americans. Just Americans being brainwashed into being afraid. And the idea is give up your rights so you have someone to take care of you and protect you.
Father knows best.
And right.
Yeah, that should be like the Bush administration mantra.
Right.
Big Brother is watching is already taken, so.
Right, and isn't that, I mean, I actually never read George Orwell's 1984. I've heard about it, and people have read me parts of it, so I'm familiar with the story.
But you would like it. It's a good book.
Yeah, I'm sure, but the reason why I never read it is it scares me too much.
It is scary.
But I'm just wondering, wasn't that the idea for Big Brother? Wasn't Big Brother supposed to be a good thing, like someone who protects you and takes care of you, or am I wrong about that?
Well, In the book, I mean, that's what the government says.
Right, the Big Brother's going to help you.
The government presents itself as, you know, this father knows best kind of thing. I mean, it's clear that from the protagonist's side that this is a nightmare. This is a horrible thing. And it basically demonstrates through fiction how a government can, look like it's doing good for you on the outside and really be doing true evil.
And was the Big Brother character supposed to protect you, to keep you safe?
Well, Big Brother is just like a nickname for the government itself.
Right,
For all of the government that it's watching over you. And, you know, it was some of the other things. War is peace. You know, ignorance is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And these are things that we are being taught today. I mean, I don't think any reasonable person can see this. I don't know that it's necessarily a new thing. Mm-hmm. But it's just... Again, the thing that separates the Bush administration from the rest of history is how obvious they are.
Yeah, and why is it that they are being so obvious and so many people are being so clueless? Is it because we're just not used to this happening in this country, do you think?
I don't know. Maybe it's like almost like if you act exactly like Big Brother, then anyone who says you're acting like Big Brother must be crazy because everyone knows Big Brother is fiction. You know what I mean?
Okay,
it's that kind of
logic,
trick psychology.
Now, the character in 1984, what's his name? Winston something?
Oh, now you're challenging my memory, although that sounds close.
Because you know why? Because I was listening to Alex Jones, who I listen to sometimes, and he pointed out that there was an advertisement on the internet, and I saw it, and unfortunately, I don't remember what site I saw it on. But he said that they had... for the real ID, which is the national ID, and that's supposed to go into effect in 2 years, from what I hear, which is scary. But he said that they had like a picture of the real ID and the fake name on it, because, you know, it was a sample of what the real ID would look like, and the fake name on it was the same name as the character in George Orwell's 1984.
Really?
Yeah, he pointed that out, and he said, this is just like, it's like they know what they're doing. Like, they really aren't planning on, you know...
That's really disturbing.
Yes.
Wow.
And I did see it at the time on the internet, but unfortunately, I don't remember which site it was on. But yeah, if that's the case, that is interesting.
Oh my God. Can we watch this news item?
Another news item.
Yeah. Yes. I grew up, when I was like 6 years old, my mom would always play me Barry Manilow records.
Oh no.
Yeah. I have to see this.
So blubber for me, Robin. Blubber, blubber.
It is. Blub, little water cooler talk this morning. And we're talking about hooligan eradication this morning. Huh? Take a look at this. Take a look at this little community by the name of Rockdale down in Australia, right outside of Sydney there. You got the young toughs and their souped-up cars playing their loud music, driving all the good folk away. So they tried a little something radical. And here's the after picture now. Can we see? This is what Rockdale looks like after they tried this. Oh, look at that.
Oh, wow.
It's like Mayberry.
Where's Barry
Manilow? And what was the difference?
I don't know what did they do?
Hit it. You kissed me and stopped me from shaking. That's right. Barry Manilow music. They blasted it on loudspeakers throughout the town of Rockdale there in an attempt to drive away what they call hoons. This Australian term, hoons for hooligans.
It was like a repellent? I mean, Barry was a kind of team repellent?
I thought he said hoons.
No.
It was an extremely derogatory term for an African-American.
Around here, and we started blasting his music,
well,
and look who showed up.
This is
what they're in for down in Rockdale.
Okay, well, we don't need to see the rest of that, but so the idea is that they've taken a town that had a problem with youth crime, and they've claimed to have fixed it by
playing Barry Manilow,
by blasting Barry Manilow music.
Well,
do you think they could do that here?
Away. Yeah, I think so.
Like right in the middle of downtown LA, just blast, I don't know.
There's an idea. You know, I'm sure that a lot of people would be running away, evacuating the area.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, Barry Manilow obviously is, you know, the kind of thing. It's not political, you know, it's just insensitive music and that either makes you want to kill someone or go away. And I guess in this case, it makes people go away. But what about political music? It seems like there hasn't been a lot of political music lately that, you know, that's easily accessible. I mean, there's like, you see a lot of satire, you know, on the internet. But, you know, there was a time in this country where people were actually writing songs that were overtly political, that were about war, and maybe it wasn't right on the nose, maybe there's some sublety in it. But I don't really hear a lot of political music anymore on the radio or anything.
Well, it's coming back, I mean, with Neil Young and some Merle Haggard, I think, Dixie Chicks, Pink. There are a few people who are writing them. System of a Down, Eminem. But, you know, what's funny, I mean, I think you're right about that. But I think what's also happening is I think the audiences are not recognizing them if they are political. Mm. Do you know? I mean, I was looking at the lyrics for a System of a Down song, and I was surprised by how political it was. I couldn't understand the lyrics when I'd heard the actual song. And I read the lyrics, and it was very political, very critical of war and... I know one of their songs asks, why do they always send the poor? Because poor people usually are the people who are sent to actually fight. And so I think like that when the occasional political song comes out that is a popular song, people don't even really take it seriously. I don't know. Perhaps it's just my perception, but that's the impression I get. It's just like it's just a, you know, a novelty.
Well, there definitely seems to be a... synthesis of, maybe that's not the right word. There's definitely some sort of connection between liberal commentary and comedy, and you know, naturally, I mean, like Jon Stewart is funny. There's no getting around that. He's a funny person. Stephen Colbert is funny, or at least I believe that to be the case. But I also think that there's an effort to take liberal ideas and make them seem even more humorous than they are. Kind of take the edge off. I mean, I think it's almost a way of discrediting it. I mean, it's how, like, Comedy Central has gotten away with a lot of really blatant political stuff by saying, oh, well, it's, you know, it's comedy. Mm-hmm. It's comedy. And I wonder, you know, if that's a newer thing or if that's a longstanding tradition, you know?
That's a good question. I hadn't really thought about that before. But I think it enables them to get away with making really powerful points without getting into trouble. I mean, Stephen Colbert, for example, as we've found out, the Republicans are so clueless. They don't even realize that he's actually criticizing them.
I can't wrap my head around that. I really can't. Why they would allow him to give that speech.
I know, it's amazing that he got away with it. But I mean, obviously they... I mean, I wonder how it happened.
Yeah, I mean, once he was there, they couldn't just kick him off the stage. But I just, you know, who booked that?
I know. I would be interested.
And is he still around?
I think the man who hosted the event booked it. If you look at the entire news broadcast of that entire event, he says something about, I booked this today. So I'm guessing he did, but I don't accept
that anybody could honestly think that Stephen Colbert, you know, isn't doing satire.
Well, remember, was it Tom DeLay's legal defense fund? We were talking about that last week. They actually had on their website a picture of Stephen Colbert, and they were using him to support their cause.
Oh God!
So apparently, there are people who are that clueless.
You have to get that high up in government to get that clueless.
Yes, I guess so.
Did you bring any news today from your adventures on KPFK?
Just a little bit, not as much as... What did you say about KPFK?
Your adventures on KPFK. I know you listen to it throughout the day, and you take notes. You get a lot of your news from there. So.
Yeah. Because it's funny, you just reminded me. I just found out about this activist support group. I went to it Wednesday. It meets the last Wednesday of every month in Santa Monica, and it's hosted by Jerry Rubin. And I found out about it through ChangeLinks magazine, change-links.org, I think. And it's great if you're interested in what's happening right now and if you're stressed out and freaked out. It's free of charge. It only meets once a month. But of course, people can start their own self-help groups too. It was very supportive. And there was a variety of people there who had... And it just reminded me of KPFK because there were a few people from KPFK there as well. And that meets the last Wednesday of every month in Santa Monica. And I'll pull up the phone number for it in a minute. And I also I wanted to say that the American Scholars Symposium is also meeting June 24th and 25th. Alex Jones will be there, Ray McGovern, Professor James Fetzer, Webster Griffin Tarpley, Professor Stephen Jones, Dylan Avery, Lieutenant Colonel Bob Bowman will be there. It's meeting at the Sheridan downtown. Tickets are $74 a person, but if you bring five or more people, it's about $35, I believe. And it's all day long that weekend. The phone number is 1-888-253-3139 if you want to get information on it. It should be a great conference. They'll be talking about September 11th, but they'll also be talking about what Alex Jones believes is the police state that's resulting from it, just our losing our civil liberties. So it's pretty interesting if you're interested in civil liberties issues or police brutality issues or September 11th or government corruption. It just should be a very interesting conference. And there should be, from what I understand, there are going to be some movies shown as well. And also, if anyone is interested in the activist group, the phone number to find out information on that is 310-399-1000. That's 399-1000, area code 310. And that's for anyone who's interested in activism or who's just concerned about what's happening in politics today.
Good. I came across this totally unrelated news item, a very short article, but it caught my eye because it was in the top news of the day. This is from Reuters. Lioness in zoo kills man who invoked God. A man shouting that God would keep him safe was mauled to death by a lioness in Kiev Zoo after he crept into the animal's enclosure, a zoo official said on Monday. The man shouted, "God will save me if he exists," lowered himself by a rope into the enclosure, took his shoes off, and went up to the lions, the official said. A lioness went straight for him, knocked him down, and severed his carotid artery. The incident Sunday evening when the zoo was packed with visitors was the first of its kind at the attraction. Lions and tigers are kept in an animal island protected by thick concrete blocks.
So he was trying to prove that God existed or doesn't exist.
Yeah, I guess he was trying to prove that God doesn't exist. Although I take this, well, I shouldn't speak ill of the dead, but I mean, one could argue that this is proof that God does exist because clearly this is a man who should not reproduce.
Oh,
I mean, that's some Darwinism at its finest there.
Oh no!
But I don't know. I mean, hopefully Bush will read this article and lighten up on the homosexuals a little bit. You know, see how butterfly flaps its wings and then tidal wave.
You're assuming that Bush loves God or worships God or
no?
Or
I'm just going by what he said, which is that he occasionally reads the paper.
Do you think that he reads?
Actually, he said he doesn't read the paper. But I have heard him say in press conferences when asked about events that happened, I've heard him say, "Oh, I read about it in this morning's paper," which I find personally upsetting because I don't know. I just like the idea that the president of the United States might get his information from a more direct source than the newspaper written the night before.
Right. That's true. Because, you know,
he's like the president and all.
That's right. He's the decider.
He is the decider. So he should be giving the information before me, in other words.
Right. Yes, he should. He should know more than us, than we do.
Unless the United States wants to change from being a democracy to being a collective, like Kill Radio, where everything gets done on consensus. And whenever we want things to happen, we all vote on them, and there's stand-asides and blocks. I think we're onto something here. Nobody's actually in charge. Everybody contributes their fair amount.
But what, are there 300 million people in this country?
Yeah, we can all meet twice a month. Just respect the equipment.
I guess we could fit that many people here and Kill Radio.
Exactly.
It'll be pretty exciting.
We have unlimited bandwidth.
Yes.
So what else do you have?
Well, according to, excuse me, this is local news, but according to moveon.org, there's a woman named Francine Busby, and she's running against Representative Duke Cunningham, who is in jail for taking bribes. And it looks like she's running pretty close. So there's a possibility. There's just that possibility that she could win. Mm-hmm. And apparently she's running against him in a Republican district, District 50. So it will be quite a victory if she does win. And also, this I got from Infowars.com, that Quebec in Canada, as we all know. well, perhaps not all, but Quebec is beefing up its privacy laws as a result of concerns about the USA Patriot Act. The Patriot Act allows the release of personal information by private businesses and allows private businesses to give information to the FBI. And so Quebec has actually responded to that. They are beefing up their privacy, trying to protect their people. Also, the U.S. government is talking with internet service providers. They want to convince them to preserve internet records and to keep records of people who are surfing the web and what kinds of things people are doing on the internet. And they want to try to get them to keep those records for 2 years at least. So, the government just wants to read our emails.
Well, I know it wants to read my emails, but I can't talk about it on the air.
Oh, dear. Do you have another news item?
The one I'm looking at right now is, it's kind of a long article, so I don't want to read the whole thing, but it's about obesity. Because I feel like every week there's another article about obesity in this country. This is from Health Day. Strict parenting can produce overweight kids. Your parenting style affects your child's weight and whether she will be overweight by the first grade, a new study found. Children of authoritarian parents had 5 times the risk of being overweight compared to children of authoritative mothers. I don't understand this article.
Children of authoritative mothers are more likely to gain weight or lose weight?
I think it's when both the parents are authoritarian. Oh, these are different words. Children of authoritarian parents had 5 times the risk of being overweight compared to children of authoritative, a more diplomatic style of mothers. Our authoritarian parents are described as strict disciplinarians, while authoritative parents are more respectful of a child's opinions and thoughts while maintaining boundaries. Two other parenting styles were evaluated by the researchers: permissive, in which parents are indulgent and don't practice discipline, and neglectful, in which parents are emotionally uninvolved and don't set rules. The findings appear in the June issue of the journal Pediatrics.
So the nicer parents have skinnier kids and the meaner parents have fatter kids? Is that basically what it's saying?
I think that's the argument. Well, actually, I think what they found was that, yeah, I mean, that's sort of the argument, but that the kids also need structure. You know, that I don't think that the, the permissive or the neglectful ones did too well either. Just that the hardcore authoritarian ones seem to have fat kids. I don't know.
Well, then there's all this stuff about hormones in the food too. I don't know if you've heard about this, but supposedly in a lot of milk products especially, there are a lot of hormones being put in those products. And as a result, little girls are developing at a much younger age than they normally would. Mm-hmm. And kids are getting a lot bigger than they normally would be getting. And it's just, it's kind of scary because it's these hormones. And, of course, we don't know what else those hormones might be doing to the body. If they're, you know, making kids grow up faster, are they going to die younger too? Are they going to grow old faster? What does that mean?
Yeah, they want them to grow up faster so they can sell them cigarettes sooner, I think. I actually had a brain train on this idea a while ago that as the country's youth gets fatter and fatter, I mean, one of the things about overweight girls is that this actually results in them hitting puberty slightly earlier. Or actually not so much that, but, you know, developing, you know, features that are associated with puberty at, you know, at age 12 instead of age 14, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that the longstanding effects on this is that it actually changes American concepts about sexuality and what is appropriate. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think over the years, this country's become a little more pedophilic than it had been. And I think one of the reasons for this is that women are literally maturing younger because they're more of them are overweight at a young age.
But, you know, like, I mean, in like historically, hundreds of years ago in Western society, girls were married off at a much younger age.
Also true.
So maybe it's sort of a resurgence of pedophilia.
Maybe. Weren't we talking about pedophilia last week?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, with the crazy Dutch people their
the
political party.
I just read in some obscure book that I saw at a bookstore about things that you're not supposed to know that supposedly it used to be that the consenting age was about 10, was 8, 9, or 10.
Wow.
And now, of course, it's older than that. What is it, 18? I think so.
Yes.
It's 18?
That's what my parole officer tells me, yes.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm glad I have a parolee, too.
It says here they don't really know why the authoritarian mothers have a little bit of a better go at it than a harder time than the authoritative ones. It says here that the scientists speculated that parents with an authoritative style allow the child to develop some of their own self-regulatory abilities. As an example, she said an authoritarian parent, not authoritative, but authoritarian, might tell his child that he needs to finish a vegetable every night, put it on his plate, and say, "Eat it." But an authoritative parent might offer a couple of different vegetables and allow the child to choose.
Have you ever heard that Weird Al Yankovic song, Eat It?
Oh, of course. I grew up on that stuff.
Oh.
Love Weird Al.
Weird Al. He's pretty weird.
Yeah.
Do you think he voted for George Bush?
No. No, I don't think so.
I hope not.
Although he's... It's interesting because he's made so much comedic music over the years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember listening to him when I was 6 years old, you know, and he's still making music.
Right.
And he's managed to, as far as I can tell, never be even the least bit political.
Hmm.
You know, all of his comedy is about, you know, playing on words and, you know, jokes, a lot of jokes about food and stuff. And mostly just a, you know, commentary on how silly pop music can be. But yeah, I always thought it was interesting that I can't think of any single any moment where he even suggested a political bent in one way or another.
And why do you think that is?
Well, I just don't think it's what his music is about. His music is about, you know, picking your nose, you know. It's about things that are kind of silly and funny and just enjoying yourself and being happy. And it's not, and I don't mean this in an insulting way, it's just it's not intellectual music. You know, it's not thinking music.
Well, I wonder if he's listening out there right now.
He might be one of the... let's take a quick look here.
If Weird Al is out there, Weird Al, you've got to get involved.
Come on, Weird Al. Run for office.
We need you.
I'd vote for Weird Al for president.
I think so. He's pretty weird. I think he'd do as good a job as Bush.
Yeah.
At least.
Weird Al or a block of wood would also do about as good a job as Bush.
Yeah, block of wood, stone, Dr. Demento. I don't know.
Asparagus, you know, the vegetable. That would be good.
Hmm.
That's what we need. We need a vegetable in office.
A vegetable.
Because not only will he be a better public speaker, but he will definitely promote healthy eating habits.
Right. And he'll be a vegetarian.
Actually, you know, good. Strange. I never really hear Bush talk about the issue of obesity. I mean, it's in the news every day. This country keeps getting fatter and fatter, but he doesn't really talk about it much. Though, mm-hmm. Not as much as he talks about, you know, the gay marriage amendment.
Right. He really likes gay marriage. But Bill Clinton is sort of involved in that, isn't he? Not gay marriage, but the the obesity thing. Isn't that one of his causes? I think that's his primary cause right now. So maybe he's behind this propaganda that we're hearing. Maybe he's trying to help get more information out there about that.
Have you seen An Inconvenient Truth?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it yet either. I hear it's fantastic.
It's been inconvenient for me. Yeah, I heard good things about it.
Yeah, no, a friend of mine who is definitely no Democrat and no fan of Gore's said that the film was impressive and significant. So it must be really good. So, if you've seen it, why not instant message us? Tell us what you thought. You can do that. Or any news item that you want us to talk about. Kill Radio Station is our handle on the AOL Instant Messenger.
Well, one other thing is 59-year-old Anne Wright, a retired Army colonel, was arrested and accused of sedition. She was...
Wait, let me guess. Listening to the Dixie Chicks.
Very close. She was at Fort McNair, and she's, a retired Army colonel, and she was passing out some literature that involved a movie about soldiers protesting the war. And there was a movie called No Sir, No Sir. It's a film about soldiers protesting the war, primarily back in the 60s. They accused her of leaving seditious materials all over the post, and they said she needed to be handcuffed. Again, she's 59 years old. So she spoke on Democracy Now. She was interviewed, and it was quite interesting.
What do you think about that? It's in terms of let's separate the reality that this is an illegal war of aggression, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and let's just focus on the fact that it's a war that exists. Mm-hmm. Do you think it should be tolerated? Someone who's actually in there, involved in the military, passing around material suggesting that the war effort is a bad one.
Well, that's a good point. Should it be tolerated? Well, I can understand they're not wanting her to pass out the information, and I could understand they're saying don't do that. But to accuse her of sedition, I don't know.
Well, I mean, trying to make an example out of her, probably, right?
Right. And well, I mean, there's also the fact that, I mean, yeah, I see your point, but there's also the fact that she was in the military, so she's a military person. But I see your point. Of course, the military, you know, doesn't want anyone to encourage their soldiers to protest the war.
Well, I don't actually have a point. I don't believe the war exists.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Oh, because you haven't seen it directly. You haven't been there, so.
Exactly.
That's true, is if you're not there, then you don't really know.
Right.
I mean, how do we know anything exists? How do we know? Maybe George Bush doesn't exist. I haven't been there. I haven't been to the White House, so he might not really be there.
Well, that's a nice idea. Maybe he doesn't exist. Maybe right now I'm actually in a straitjacket. I'm not at Kill Radio. I'm actually in a white, you know, padded room in a straitjacket. And
this whole
Bush administration never happened.
Wouldn't that be nice? I wish that could be true. You know, I just saw this movie, Waking Life. I don't know if you've seen it. It's very good.
Oh, that's the animated one,
yes,
right?
Yes.
No, I haven't seen it.
And that's what it's about. The character in the movie is dreaming the whole time. And he finds out that he's just dreaming. He can't wake up.
Wow. That's not the end of the movie, is it?
I'm not
Did you just ruin
you
the movie for
Did,
me?
I ruined it for you. No, I well, sorry.
And for the oh. and for the 3,000 listeners who are, well, who are right, listening
are
live 3,000. Right now.
Well, if Alex Jones is in the movie too.
Oh yeah.
Ranting and raving about how we need to wake up and smell the coffee. Basically,
I believe
talking
that.
About political propaganda, we need to, you know, and that's basically the movie is just it. No, it actually doesn't ruin it for you because the movie is very philosophical, very thoughtful. And it's just a lot of people talking about their philosophy on life and mm-hmm. why we're all here, what the meaning of life is. And it's basically about waking up because we all kind of live in a sort of a paradigm. You know, we all kind of are taught to think about things a certain way. And I think that's why some people are having so much trouble recognizing the crimes that I think the Bush administration has been committing, you know, because it's hard to wake up and to realize we've been taught all our lives America's the greatest country in the world and we're free and democratic and we're the good guys. And it's hard to wake up and realize, oh, my gosh, everything I've been taught all my life is wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
and we're so self-absorbed, too, that, you know, we can't see the bigger picture. We think right. our problems are so important. You know, I set the VCR to record American Idol and it didn't work. I'm freaking out, you know. Meanwhile, the rack body count for the day is over 40,000
right.
innocent civilians.
And those poor people, you know, imagine what their daily life is like.
Yeah.
And the Vietnam War, I used to believe it was a war for democracy. I thought we went to Vietnam to bring democracy to Vietnam. And I've recently been finding out that that's not the case, that it was a little bit similar to what's happening now, that, you know, it was more about making a profit and controlling other people. And it wasn't at all about bringing democracy.
Well, and you so rarely hear the idea, the term, like, you so rarely hear bringing democracy challenged as an idea.
Mm-hmm.
I like, it's just accepted, like, oh, we're going to bring democracy here. We're going to bring democracy there.
Right.
No one has ever been able to show me that democracy is something that you can move, you know?
Exactly. It's like saying we're going to force freedom on you.
Exactly. You can't bring democracy somewhere. You can't put democracy somewhere. You can have democracy. You can focus on democracy. You can improve and embrace democracy, but you can't bring democracy. It's not the obligatory six pack that you bring to the party, you know. Oh, I brought you some democracy too, and I'm going to take one home with me though, if that's okay. No, you can't do that.
Right, and have you heard of this book called "Confessions of an Economic Hitman"?
It does sound familiar. I haven't read it, but the title sounds familiar.
It's really good if you get a chance to see it. It should be. It's a fairly new book, so it should be still out most of the bookstores. And basically, the man who wrote it said he was an economist working for the government, and he was an economic hitman, which meant he would go to countries around the world, and he would sort of make deals with poorer countries. He would say to them, you know, we're going to lend you some money, and then basically that country would become indebted to the United States,
mm-hmm.
and then the United States would try to influence their policy. And most of the time, the policy would be such that it would result in the poor people of those countries suffering, because it was about money coming to the United States but being taken from the people of that country. And he basically said that if the leader of the country didn't adhere to the policies that the United States wanted them to adhere to, they would mysteriously die shortly after. And he said that Hugo Chavez was on the list of one of the leaders who the United States just hasn't been focusing on as much lately because they've been so involved in the war.
Mm-hmm.
But he makes the claim that if we weren't involved in this war right now, that Hugo Chavez may not be at
yeah.
all. Because Hugo Chavez is more committed to helping the poor people of his country
so,
than he is about being bribed into.
Right. And we're just a little pressed for time. So we don't have the time to spare to kill him. To kill Hugo
right.
Chavez. That's great. That's a sobering thought. But, you know, I often think about that, you know, if we weren't at war in Iraq, would we be in some sort of conflict somewhere else? Because isn't this really the only thing that keeps an administration like the Bush administration in power? Mm-hmm. Is a perpetual state of conflict.
Right, to get the people of the United States to feel that they have to be loyal to their president because we're in a dangerous situation, we're in a war.
Right, and well, you have the two major supporters are the philosophical, right-wing religious fanatics who believe in, you know, bringing peace through fire, as it were. Mm-hmm. And of course, the people who sell bullets for a living. So those two things combined, a very, very powerful machine.
Right. And that's another thing that bothers me about George Bush, too, is what he's doing to Christianity. Because, I come from a Christian background, and I know a little something about Christianity, about how many Christians and people of other religions as well live. And many of those Christian fundamentalists are very isolated from the outside world. They only read Christian books and watch Christian movies and listen to Christian music.
They're easily taken advantage of.
Exactly. So it's so easy to manipulate them, and all they need is a corrupt minister, you know, a corrupt religious leader to tell them, vote for George Bush, he's great. And they're just going to do it. So, I mean, not all those people are bad people. And it kind of bothers me that Christian, like, there are some people, for example, Mike Malloy, who's on Air America, he attacks Christians a lot mm-hmm. on his show. And it's not really fair because, you know, Christians are not. Most of us Americans are very uninformed. We're not getting information. And many of those religious fundamentalists are people who have good intentions. And if they really knew what George Bush is doing, someone's laughing. No, seriously, I think some of them do. Some of them do. I mean, I've met people who are very isolated Christian people. They mm-hmm. they really don't listen to mainstream music or mainstream news. They're really, really isolated. They have no clue. And we have to remember, too, the Republicans went and they gave all this money to all these religious organizations across the country and to convince them that they were pro-religion. And so a lot of these religious leaders said, oh, yeah. I mean, what are you going to do if someone donates money to you? You're going to think, oh, hey, great guy.
It's,
you're donating
much,
money.
Much the same way Hamas took over the government in the Palestinian territories by, mm-hmm. you know, providing the hospitals, providing the schools, you know, mm-hmm. providing the money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you imagine yourself, it's like, yeah, sure, okay. You know, I mean, this is slightly unrelated, but yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, Hamas is an organization of murderers. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And yet, if you're a Palestinian, who are you going to vote for?
Yeah.
You know, you're going to vote for the guy, for the organization that put your kid in school. Sure, it might be teaching hate or whatever to the kid, you know. Mm-hmm. Kid gets hurt, he goes to a hospital. It's not, you know.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's like Hitler when he was starting out, you know, he was talking about making Germany great and people just thought he was great.
Well, I have to wonder about people who follow people. Like, it's easy to say Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell is a bad person because you see him speak and he says things that only bad people say, you know, like, right. you know, blaming feminists and homosexuals for 9/11.
Right.
You know, only a bad person would even intimate something like that.
Or a crazy person.
No, because crazy implies a sort of lack of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bad person because he knows how many people are listening to him mm-hmm. and taking his word as, no pun intended, as gospel. Okay. And so we have to wonder about the people who follow these people. You know, can we just write them off like Mike Malloy would and say mm-hmm. they're all crazy or they're all idiots, mm-hmm. you know? Or are they really victims that, you know, they live in an environment where they're told from day one that they're supposed to look up to certain people.
Mm-hmm.
And then those people tell them things that are bad,
yeah.
you know?
Well, I guess the reason why, like, I'm bringing this up is because I think that George Bush is, like, he's trying to get us fighting with each other. And it's so easy and so tempting to judge other people and say, oh, those people are so stupid and why are they, you know, but I think that maybe, you know, we have a better chance of defeating Bush if we try to find a way to sort of talk to each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's kind of a lost art, you know, the art of communication, because we're so used to going home and watching TV and, you know, we can be intolerant as quote unquote liberals, just as conservatives can be intolerant,
sure.
you know? I mean, the intolerance works both ways. And it's just as intolerant to say, I hate you because I don't like your religious beliefs, as it is to say, you know, I hate you because you are religious. I hate you because you're not religious.
Right.
I mean, it's hate is hate, I think. Whatever group of people you choose to hate, you know? I mean, hating Christians is no better or worse than hating Muslims or hating Jews or hating Buddhists. You know, it's hate. And I just think that it's so tempting to do that. And that's what the Bush administration wants us to doing. And that's why
they
keep
want us
up
to hate
issues.
Each other. And, Yeah, and absolutely. And I think also we'd be well served to not talk so much, not communicate so much on issues that don't matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, you realize this coming election may be the first, you know, this hugely, let's say 2008, you know, whoever's going to be the next president, it's a hugely important election. And there's a war going on, you know, the entire world is unstable, there's serious environmental concerns, blah, blah, blah. This election is going to come down to what people think about gay marriage.
Right, exactly. And it's just so silly. I mean, it's...
But it's because we engage in that discussion. The Republicans say gay marriage is important, and all Democrats go, good, we thought we were going to have to talk about the war today. Yeah, no, we support gay marriage sometimes, except when we don't. You know, and then... Right.
It's kind of like that old family values thing, you know, like, do you love your grandma? Do you love your parents? You know, and I mean, it's kind of like, well, what am I trying to say? It's almost like you can't answer the questions that they're asking. Are you for or against gay marriage? No matter how you answer it, you're going to offend somebody.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like they just bring up these things and they know that it's going to cause people to argue. No matter.
I had a friend put it to me in a way that I just thought was perfect. He said, I'm not against gay marriage, but I am against gay interracial marriage. So gay people can marry each other, but not if they're from different races.
I think we should have a weird amendment like that. You know? Gay people can marry each other, but not under this or that circumstance.
That would be the Democratic Party's, like, you know, olive branch to the Republicans. Like, okay, let us have gay marriage, but we'll let you have racism. Okay. Well, we got to go. We're out of time. I'm going to throw on an archive of National Corporate Radio, people who do that. Do you have any last-minute news, anything you wanted to mention?
Well, no. I guess not. Not today.
Okay, well, we'll be back next week for the Kill Radio Tuesday News. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for an archived edition of National Corporate Radio.